Now live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Jaguars Today brought to you on Tuesdays by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at EverBank Field. Jaguars Today kicking off on this Tuesday. One day closer, Tony, to real football coming back around. Let's find out what kind of Jaguar-related material we can delve into today. How you doing? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's great.
Flying the flag. We got to get some new shirts, by the way.
Yeah,
we do. Not like a new design. We just need new
we need
product.
More.
We need more inventory.
Yeah.
We blazed through the last batch and haven't re-upped in a while, so we need to do that before training camp, before all the peeps start coming out and watching practice. If you do come out to watch practice whenever the schedule is announced. John Osier told us might be later this week that we get the training camp schedule.
Yeah.
Whenever it's out, leave about 3 days early to get here. Seriously, is it that much different if you leave 15 minutes earlier or 15 minutes later? Apparently it is, because if you leave my house in a certain window, pretty smooth sailing to get here. And if you leave maybe 5-10 minutes later than that, it's gridlock city, and you sit there and wait in that right lane for the Main Street Bridge to go up and down and up and down and up and down.
I always go down Emerson anyway. But
do you?
Look, I think they were doing construction on San Marco today is what wound up being the problem, which...
Nobody uses San Marco. You're not going to fix San Marco.
It's not about Marco. It's about doing construction on 95 at 8 in the morning is stupid. Like, wherever you're doing it, it's stupid. All lanes need to be open by the time that, at least during the rush hours, all those
Just
lanes need to be open.
Until we get to work.
Right.
Let's be honest, all right? We don't care about the rest of you. We like you in your cars, because that's where you're more likely to listen to
us
anyway, right? So get back in your car and do it. I'm already kind of on edge today because I spent the afternoon waiting for a certain company. I'm not going to say who. They're not a sponsor, so I probably should. But a certain company to come out to my house and do something. Now, had it been a plumbing issue, I would have called Metro Rooter, and it would have been no problem. It wasn't a plumbing issue. Okay, I'm not going to go any further down the line into what kind of issue it was, but it was something simple. Simple if they show up when they're supposed to show up, right? What shouldn't there be some kind of financial penalty for a company that makes me sit there and wait around all afternoon in their window of availability? So I do that yesterday, and that window closed at 5 o'clock with no sight of the person who's supposed to come out to the house. So I call the company up. They're like, well, this is very interesting. And I'm all confused by what they're saying. It looks like they were double booked. They've got you scheduled to come out on Friday. I'm like, no. Monday between 3 and 5 o'clock. That's when they're supposed to be at my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally bothered to listen to the answering machine, right? And guy called the answering machine, calls my wife, who's out of town. I guess he doesn't know that. But he calls my wife. He says, Heather, this is so-and-so from such-and-such, and I have an appointment to come out to your house this afternoon. Please call me back when you get a chance. That's the message. So I get the guy on the phone. He goes, oh, yeah, well, you know, I left you a message that I was double booked and had to cancel your appointment. I said, no, you didn't, fat liar. And so then he says, well, you know, I was double booked and, you know, when you didn't answer, I said, so it's, let me get this straight. Is this your company's policy that if you call 7 hours before you're supposed to be there, because you called at 8 in the morning, 7 hours before you're supposed to be there and no one answers, that you automatically cancel the appointment? At which point he sheepishly admitted, no, in fact, it is not company policy to do that. So I'm ticked. And he says, well, I could come tomorrow. I'll come tomorrow and take care of it. What time can you be there? I said, the earliest I can be at my house is 1 o'clock. And that's if I leave here immediately afterwards and I don't get to have fellowship and camaraderie with Hacker. And that's going to upset me, okay? But if I go straight to the Hacienda, I can be home by 1 o'clock. He goes, okay, good. I'll tell you what, I could probably be there by 12:30. I'm like, are you listening to me? The earliest I can be there is 1 o'clock. So you're going to show up at 12:30. I'm not going to be there. Then you're going to leave. He goes, okay, 1 o'clock. I promise you, I give you my word, I'll be there at 1 o'clock because I always take care of my people. Oh, this is an example of you taking care of your people. I see. So I've informed my wife that we need a new company that does this particular thing. I've made that idle threat many a time before, on many occasions.
I'm sure you have.
I once, Tony, this is inside the, you want to go inside the business, okay? This is inside the Dempsey's business right here. My wife had just given birth recently, so this was 11 years ago, right, to Colin, and he's just a little hungry, whiny, cry, pooping little ball of joy.
He's,
you know,
a baby.
He's
yeah.
a baby. He's a baby. So my wife needs a breast pump, okay? I think we're all adult enough to say that on the air. And so I go, I forget what the circumstances were, but basically I needed one from Walmart, and I wasn't getting what I was, you know, like I'd called them up, something like I'd called them up, they said they had them, and I got there, they didn't have them. And long story short, and it's already longer than it should have been, I swore I would never again step foot into a Walmart, Tony. I'm saying that now, 11 years after the fact, that I may not have held true to that vow over time. So I have been known to make these proclamations from time to time, and occasionally I may be stubborn enough to back them up, but I probably just let inertia take its course, and we keep on moving the way we've been moving. So there you go. So I got that. I got the traffic issue. What else is going on? You know, I forgot yesterday when we were talking about the guy who lit the mortar off the top of his head.
Yeah.
Didn't I tell you there was another stupid story like that? And
yes.
I couldn't think of the alligator story that they were talking about on the drill this morning. The guy who jumped in and said, F the alligator, and he jumped in, and the alligator was literally under the dock that he jumped off of, and he's like, oh, this will be easy, and he just swam right out and immediately ate the guy. I mean, instantly ate the guy. So, you know, the Darwin Awards have some candidates
yeah,
this year.
July 4th always gives you a couple.
Well, and
always
the thing,
a handful.
Apparently, in that guy's case, it was well posted. Dangerous, they're like big alligators in this lake. And the people there were telling, no, 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 you do, trust me, don't go in the water. There were signs posted, and this guy's like,
Pah. I ain't afraid of no gator.
I ain't afraid of no gator.
Who's afraid of gators?
Come on, who's the last person you know that got ate by a... That's pretty much how it went for that guy. So, there you have it.
That's
all
ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, get that all off my chest. Here we go. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in today.
Oh, while I'm starting Shark Week.
I don't know. Is when did it start yesterday, I take it,
Sunday,
right?
Yeah.
Sunday?
Sunday night.
Anything good
officially.
So far? I never really get
There's
into Shark
There's been
some
Week. Cool stuff. There was a show last night about what they're calling a serial killer shark in California. They're having people that have been bit basically 2 years apart.
Is this a fake out again by Discovery?
No. They're not doing any of the mockumentaries.
So that's
this
what
year.
They tell you. Then you really get sucked in.
Well, no. Because they put that at the end of that one last year, the Megalodon, which was awesome. I mean, I thought it was completely awesome. It turned out to be completely fake, and I still enjoyed showing it to people that hadn't known it was fake and watching them react, and then at the end go, you, like, just look at me like I had betrayed them, because they were totally into it. But no, they have a shark that's, they think it's one shark that's been attacking people every 2 years because of a migration pattern, on this one beach in California. They did a show about it last night. They were trying to get a DNA sample from some of the fish that were in the water.
It's so hunting for Roy Scheider,
so
isn't it?
They could try to find if they found this particular shark. They didn't find it during the show. And they had another one where they called it alien sharks, and it's basically, they're going down to depths that we haven't been able to get into the water before, and they're finding these new species of shark.
Like a shark with one of those little glowing bulbs hanging over
its
head?
Well, sort of. They talked about, I forget, were they translucent? I think. I don't remember.
Where you can kind of see through them, right?
Well,
is that what translucent is?
No, I forget exactly what they called it, but there was a difference between the two. And basically, it's like jellyfish that could glow. Right? We've been using those molecules in science, and it's actually helped us leap forward in our treatment of cancer and Alzheimer's and all these different things. And they're finding these sharks at these depths that can do the same thing. And they're wondering if they have some kind of properties in those molecules that can actually help us. They tracked and put a tracer on our first, what was it, a megamouth shark. Last night on one of those shows. I mean, it's if you like sharks, it's really cool
I'm
watching
sure
those kind of shows.
Look, well, people love the Shark Week stuff. I just, you know, the fake mockumentary stuff, whatever.
Yeah, I don't want the fake stuff. I did flip over during halftime of the Women's World Cup game on Sunday.
You didn't watch a halftime analysis?
No, I didn't watch pregame. I didn't watch halftime.
What are you, but, Japanese?
No, but I flipped over during halftime, and they actually they wanted to see about the how if sharks hunted at depth the same way they do on the surface, especially great whites, because great whites will strike from underneath against like seals and stuff that are on the surface. I wanted to see if they do the same thing at depth. And when, again, we've never had cameras that can really capture that kind of thing. So they had a camera 300 feet beneath the surface, and a great white shark struck it at 35 miles an hour in the water from underneath, and you got the whole thing on film. I mean, it was pretty incredible to watch this animal attacking that camera. Now, I'm sure the shark was very disappointed.
I'm sure it was.
I got a mouthful of camera instead of a seal or whatever he thought it might be. But it was still really cool to watch that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, we're able to do things in the water that we've never been able to do before. It's like we've been all about exploring space for a while now, and that's kind of shut down in a lot of ways. We have this entire area in the ocean that we haven't been able to explore. It's all out there, and we're finally, the technology is catching up a little bit and allowing us to see some of these things.
Well, because, you know, we're going to Europa, apparently. They're going to send a mission to Europa, check out the oceans on Europa. What's that, one of the moons of Jupiter, right?
And they want to do the one-way mission to Mars to set up a colony.
Would you go?
No. No.
Bob's your age?
Bioluminescence.
Similarly,
that
unattached?
Sounds correct.
Bioluminescence. Yes.
Bioluminescence.
Yes.
I couldn't do
glowing
space travel.
No?
I get motion sick.
If you could, though, if you could withstand the trap, if you could go into, you know, what do you call that? Suspended animation. If you could basically go to sleep for however, year.
I'm not
and
like,
be there.
I'm not like married with kids, but I do have family. Like, it's not like.
Take them with you.
They don't want to go to Mars on that one-way mission? No, I don't have any interest
who
in doing that.
Who would like to go to Mars? All right, today...
Who would you like to send to Mars?
Today on Jaguars Today, which planet would you like to explore? No, today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, your fan feedback question of the day requests and requires you to put on your thinking caps just a small degree today. We ask you which Jaguar will most surprisingly surpass expectations this year. And so... First of all, what do you have to do to figure that out? You have to figure out what the expectations are for some of these guys. I would say this. For instance, I take Julius Thomas right off the list. Isn't he the most hyped up Jaguar that maybe the Jag that the average person expects the most from?
Yeah,
this
probably.
Year, right? Heard a lot of raves at OTAs how he looked like the best player on the roster, right? Proven Pro Bowler, big time performer. So I don't know what everyone's expectations are, but I would think they'd be as lofty for Julius Thomas as just about anybody. So unless you think he's going to set career marks above what he did with Peyton Manning in the Denver offense, then I don't think he's going to surprisingly exceed expectations by that great a degree. We've already got a lot of submissions on this one on Allen Robinson, and we'll discuss that.
Yep.
What are your expectations for Allen Robinson? So if you say, hey, you know what? I think he can be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. Well, but is that what is the consensus? What does the public feel about Allen Robinson? Because I do think he can be a 1,000-yard receiver, and I won't be that surprised if he ends up being in that range this year. So we'll discuss that today. Which Jaguar will most surprisingly surpass expectations this year? You can share your thoughts with us at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can tweet Tony and I at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. You can even throw in at 1010XL Tyler in there. Oh, my goodness. I know Dan and Jeff mentioned at the end of the show, if you haven't heard the story, about Jared from Subway. Oh, dear. We'll get to that coming up as well. DeAndre Johnson kicked
I haven't
out
looked
of
it
Florida
up
State.
Yet.
Don't look it up.
I haven't looked it up.
You're not aware of this.
All I know is police raided his house.
Yes,
you,
they did.
You told me not to look it up. To
Don't
avoid
look it,
it
up. I just wanted to see if you could guess what was going on with good old Jared
I have
from Subway.
A couple of guesses.
There you go. We'll come back, and we'll talk Jags. We'll talk Shark Week. We'll talk whatever you like. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at Everbank. Jaguars Today just kicking off on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Happy Tuesday to you. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today, live at Everbank, a much more hustling, bustling Everbank the last couple of days back in the full swing of things.
Yeah.
Everybody's had their downtime. Seeing players trickle in every morning. They probably left their house at about 4 a.m. to get here shortly before 9, like myself as well. Maybe that's what it's going to take.
Sure.
Set the alarm for 3.
Hopefully not. By the way, because we were talking about Shark Week a moment ago,
I
couldn't find the word on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Thank you, whoever you are, that texted in bioluminescent, because that is what the sharks were that they were looking at last night.
You are a learned, very well-read listener.
That's right. And I think it's bioluminescent and biofluorescent. And fluorescent are the fish that glow where...
That stuff in your toothpaste, right?
Maybe. That's fluoride.
Oh.
But biofluorescent are fish that glow that we can see, like jellyfish and stuff that are in the ocean that the human eye can see. Bioluminescent can only be seen by other animals.
Is that why your teeth glow after you brush them?
I do not know. I highly doubt it.
All right. Bioluminescent, biofluorescent.
Yes.
There will be a quiz coming up at 11:55 later on today. Tony will give it to Hacker, and we'll see how he does. All right. Tony, let's just get this horrible bit of news out of the way here.
Oh, is this the Jared?
This is the Jared. Let's just deal with this. First of all, if you're hungry for lunch, just go pick up a dandy sandwich today, okay? You should do that anyway. Just go pick up a dandy sandwich today. It's the best out there. It's as fresh as anything you're going to get at any of these other places. But, Tony, why are authorities at Jared's house today? What you got? Give me your top three guesses why the authorities may be at Jared's house today. Think he's got a stack of Quiznos coupons sitting around?
I highly doubt it. Honestly, the first thing that came to mind, and while it's absolutely repulsive, it's the first thing that came to mind, because this is why guys his age get their houses broken into by the police to look at, is child pornography.
Ding, 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 yeah. Ding, ding. We'll skip guesses 2 and 3. We'll skip. I thought you were going to maybe go with the grow house, but no. You went with child porn, which has been the industry standard for guessing for why guys get their houses raided, why single men who look kind of goofy get their houses raided. Not that you have to look goofy to be a horrendous person, but
yeah,
he looks kind of goofy.
He does look kind of goofy, and that's a horrible story.
Well, it says, according to the stories, that is ongoing right now. His house is in Indiana. Federal agents are there. FBI investigators, Indiana State Police. They've got an evidence truck in the driveway. And it says the raid appears to be part of a long-term investigation. Back in April, police arrested Russell Taylor, who is the executive director of Jared's, quote, the Jared Foundation. Right? He's got a foundation. And the executive director of the Jared Foundation was arrested for child exploitation, possession of child pornography, and voyeurism. Okay? Vogel said at the time that the foundation had severed all ties with him. So, the story goes on to say, in a kind of a did-you-know way, according to a 2007 VH1 report, Vogel had a booming business when he was in college. He was renting porn out of his own personal stash, out of his dorm room. It says, All-American Jared was known for something entirely different. According to our source, while studying at Indiana University, make the Hoosier State proud here, Tyler, Fogel ran a very successful pornography rental company out of his bedroom. His porn collection was vast and extensive. What a shock that a guy like that probably wasn't getting any of his own real-life action. I'm really surprised that Jared wasn't doing well with the ladies. His porn collection was vast and extensive, and Fogel took his business pretty seriously. A video would run a patron just $1 a day, and people would come from all over to take advantage of the deal. Needless to say, this is according to the VH1 story, needless to say, Jared had enough porn to keep his customers happy. So, hey, look, it's legal. You know what? Enterprising businessman, all that stuff. Go on about your business.
Still not exactly the guy that you want as the front man and spokesperson for your sandwich shop for the past decade.
Subway apparently said that at the time that they were not at, they told TMZ at the time the company had no knowledge of the story. So whatever. He'd continue to be. Look, for all we know, he's not guilty of anything. We don't know. Maybe it was this other guy, and this other guy's trying to save his skin. He goes, I'll give you the big fish. I'll give you the front man.
I'll give you
sandwich guy.
You know, the guy.
You, the guy the foundation is actually named for, I'll give you that guy. But you have it.
All those stories. Every time I hear one of those, it's just disturbing.
Well, look, if he's really into it, I hope they catch him in all his slimy, depraved
cohorts.
Get them all. Get them all off the face of the earth. And if he's not guilty, hopefully, you know what? We'll give it as much attendant publicity as anything. But does this end it for Jared either way? Is the fact that an FBI investigative unit is at your house looking for child porn, is that enough to do you in as a corporate spokesman?
I would guess yes.
Who's got a better chance today of being a corporate spokesman? You're going to go with DeAndre Johnson? You're going to go with Jared from Subway?
DeAndre? Honestly?
I don't know. You know, honestly, and the thing of this whole situation is now.
At least in that one, there was some kind of mitigating circumstance. Like, if the thing with Jared turns out to be true, this is just a guy who's disgusting.
Right, you're just awful. And look, the DeAndre Johnson story, if you've watched the video, obviously got kicked out of Florida State yesterday for punching a woman in a bar. It appears she was the instigator.
Yep.
And look, let me make this clear. Don't punch a woman. Period. Don't punch a woman.
Punch
a woman unless a woman's got a gun to a baby's head or something like that, you know?
If you're DeAndre, get yourself out of a situation where you wind up being physically assaulted by anybody. I mean, just remove yourself from the situation.
That happened pretty quickly, though. It from what it looks like, and you don't know the context because I'm not hearing, you don't hear the audio, but it looks like this girl slipped right in front of him as he was next in line to order a drink, and he said, you know, probably said something like, hey, get out, you know, you're in my spot. And she immediately raised her right fist like she was going to punch at her. And what do they always say? Hey, just grab her, hold her, don't swing at her. So what he did, he grabbed her kind of right wrist because she raised the fist to punch him, and she closed the left fist and punched him in the face with the left fist. Now, again, walk away, okay? There's just nothing good that's going to come out of it. Doesn't matter. I don't care if this goes to court, Tony, and he is proven in the eyes of the law to have acted in self-defense. It doesn't matter because the reality of the situation is, this is just the reality. Doesn't matter right or wrong. The reality is if you're an athlete today and you're caught on video striking a woman, you're done. Right? I mean, pretty much you're done. Yeah. And it really has come down to the video aspect of it because we talked about that Frank Clark situation, the guy from Michigan who got picked up, and the details of his alleged domestic violence are pretty graphic.
Yes, they are.
The Seahawks went ahead and drafted him anyway and said they did their own investigation, which consisted of just asking him, did you do it?
Yeah. I mean, look, there was a story out 2 weeks ago from someone who had seen the video of DeAndre and described it beat for beat. What happened? That there was apparently a confrontation between these two at the bar. She was elbowing him away from the bar. That she turned and raised her right fist. He grabbed her right fist. That's when she swung with her left and he punched her in the face. It is an exact description of what happened. And it mentioned the fact that she knees him in the groin while all this is going on. That it was an exact description of what happened, and people were still like, well, let's see what it actually looks like. They told you what it looked like, right? But now everybody has seen it. And it's hard for DeAndre to get away from this thing at this point. There's also apparently witnesses that are willing to testify to some of the names and things that she said to DeAndre Johnson while they were standing there, including using the N-word in his face. Look, I understand why DeAndre would be upset in the situation he was in. You can't punch her like that. I mean, you just can't punch her like that.
Well, and that's, like I said, it doesn't matter what the law will eventually say about this. When you've got an organization, a football team, that's got to worry about public perception, and people are going to laugh and say, when's the last time FSU cared about public perception? But if there had been video of Jameis Winston doing something that he was accused of doing to this degree,
he
would have been long gone as well, okay? They stood by Jameis Winston. He stands by his innocence. You can't claim you didn't punch a woman in the face when it's on video when you're punching a woman in the face. So, again, whether you're justified under the eyes of the law or not. And I'm not saying is or isn't. I don't know what the legalities of that are when the other person clearly strikes you first. If it had been a 150-pound guy, right, and he clearly had no business in a fight with DeAndre Johnson, but DeAndre Johnson hauled off and cocked him in the face after getting punched, I don't think anybody would say a word. They'd say, a guy shouldn't pick a fight that he can't handled.
Yeah, I mean, there may be some kind of legal ramifications.
Right, it may be like a misdemeanor assault thing, but nobody would
Which is what this is. That's what this is.
Right.
Right. I mean, this isn't domestic violence. This is a misdemeanor assault, and we don't know how the court's going to play it out with both sides of this story.
Right, they may both get charged in this whole
thing. Right, I just, for Florida State, I don't see how DeAndre's going to be allowed to continue to play football on that campus.
Well, he's done, yeah.
And I hate that for DeAndre, especially if this is just an isolated incident where it got carried away in a single moment. I hate it for him because, look, I have covered him for the last 4 years. And a guy who commits to somewhere after his freshman year is because he's been thinking about playing at that place since he was 7, 8 years old. Right? I mean, this is all that DeAndre's wanted, is to be a Florida State Seminole and for it to get thrown away this way by his own actions. Like, he put himself
in
a situation.
Don't you have to prioritize, though, Tony? If this is so important to you, don't you have to remove yourself from a circumstance? What is it? The appearance of impropriety is what you need to avoid, right? Even if you're not doing anything wrong.
Just get yourself out of the situation.
How about this? How about not be at a bar ordering drinks
right.
if you're under 21 years old?
Right.
Okay? I mean, and look, you know, did I ever go to a bar? Hush your mouth. No, I did not. My ID said I was at least 21 years old at the time. But in all seriousness, if I had been caught doing something like that and I had faced consequences, I know what I'm blaming but myself.
Right.
Right?
And I don't know, you know, what his blood alcohol content was. He appears to be a bit stumbly. He looks to me like he may be a little bit inebriated in that video.
I really couldn't tell one way or the other. I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm not trying to believe me.
But I'm not saying that I know that he was.
His actions.
I'd say he appears to be that to me, at least watching the video. Look, I feel bad for DeAndre. I really do. And I hope that this is something where if it is an isolated incident, and I think that it is, but I don't know that for sure, but I think that it's an isolated incident. I do hope that he gets the opportunity to play football somewhere else.
I'm sure he will somewhere.
Whether it's the JUCO route, and then eventually he winds up back in a major university or whatever it happens to be, because it's a terrible situation for you to find yourself in, especially for somebody who had so much promise going
forward.
People
are going to say, well, wait a minute, I should let somebody just punch me in the face? In this instance, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this instance, yes. Okay, let me tell you a story. You're going to think this is crazy, okay? When I was a kid, my sister's 3 years older than me. We used to walk home from school in Connecticut, like this little two-mile walk, uphill both ways. You get the whole deal. But she had this friend, Rebecca. I lived about halfway home. I don't know how this came about one day. I'm probably like in third grade. They're like in sixth grade, right? They're monsters compared to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she is... Dude, she's messing with me somehow, right? I don't know. She pushed me into a picket fence, but there was a picket fence involved, and I remember pushing her into this fence in retaliation. And oh my goodness, if I was ever scared a day in my life of my father, that was the day.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what he was going to do to me. And he put the fear of God and everything else into me that under no circumstances. Under no circumstances do you hit a girl, okay? Flash forward to 7th or 8th grade,
mm-hmm.
okay? True story, all right? This girl, Melissa, I still remember her name. Huge girl, all right? And I was a tall guy, all right? Skinny, tall, but not a tiny kid, okay? But this was a big, burly girl, right? And for some reason, the bus driver stops the bus, okay? You're not supposed to get off the bus if you're the bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, on this day, the bus driver stops the bus, gets off the bus. There's something going on. There's an accident or something. So I'm on the bus. She's in the seat behind me. And I get up, turn around. I'm on my knees on the seat. And what do you think I'm doing? Running my mouth, Tony, right?
Sure.
What a shock that I may be a smartass, right, at some point in my youth. And I'm being a smartass. And she tells me, turn around. Well, now, at this point, I can't turn around. Because then, that girl told you to turn around, and you turned around, right? So I can't turn around.
Mm-hmm.
You know what she did? She punched me right in the face. I'm not kidding you. She punched me right in the face. And at this point, I'm like, I've got all these sensory overload in my brain. Like, I want to punch her back in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps in the throat or anywhere else. No, you will not hit a girl, right? And so literally, I'm standing there. Now I'm like, but wait, now I can't turn around and sit back down. Because now, not only am I the guy who got told to turn around by the girl, I got told to turn around, and when I didn't obey, I got punched in the face, and then I turned around.
Right.
She proceeded to punch me in the face a good 3 or 4 more times. I'm not kidding you. And I obviously had the stigma of being the guy who got punched in the face, but hopefully, at least, probably didn't impress upon 7th and 8th grade minds at the time that, hey, maybe it took a little bit more guts to not punch her back in the face.
Right.
Right? And so for me, I know exactly how difficult it is to live up to that in this particular instance. Because it, now, it's a long time ago, a much younger deal. I wouldn't have been splashed across the internet, which didn't exist back, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
But I knew enough, or at least I had been conditioned enough by that point that no matter what the provocation is, I mean, short of she's got a knife to your throat, you know, she's going to kill that somebody. She, you know, there's a line you that anyone crosses that they're fair game, but getting hit by a girl is not enough to cross that line. That was impressed upon me. And whether that's true in reality, because people argue, well, aren't women supposed to be equal to men, da-da-da-da-da. Well, all that's great. And maybe in the eyes of the law, it'll turn out that way for DeAndre Johnson. But
sure.
it's about public perception as much as anything when you're that high profile now. Fair or not, fair doesn't factor into real life.
Yeah, no, it certainly doesn't. And for those who are out there thinking, you know, he just has to live these mistakes in public, yeah, you're right. And he also gets to live the triumphs of being a quarterback at
right.
FSU in public and being Mr. Football in the state of Florida in public. Like, he gets those accolades, and that's why people pay attention to these kind of stories. It sucks for him. You know, I don't like it for him, but it's a situation he put himself in.
We'd all like life to be fair.
Right.
All like life to be fair. The earlier you can learn that lesson, the probably the better off you'll be in life. And in this case, for DeAndre Johnson, it could have been just 1 3-second window of bad judgment.
Yep.
But, you know, I think Florida State did the right thing. They can't have him associated with the program.
I agree.
After that video, no matter what. We will come back. We'll take a look at expectations, Tony, for some of these Jacksonville Jaguars this year.
Yeah.
Kind of set a baseline for what we think for some of these players. And then we can more reasonably talk about surprisingly exceeding those expectations. That's our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day. Which Jaguar player will most surprisingly exceed expectations this year? In other words, whatever the general consensus is for how this player will perform, he'll go above and beyond to the surprise and delight of Jaguar fandom everywhere. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Live at Everbank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Glad you're along with us here, Jaguars Today on this Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Tyler Devitt has just thrown some statistics in my face, Tony, that I'd like to share with you and the listening audience.
Okay.
About wide receivers last year who were rookies, and that feeds into what we're talking about. What is your expectation for some of these players? We ask you today, which Jaguar player is most surprisingly going to exceed expectations this year? In other words, if you think a lot of people think Julius Thomas is going to have a lot of success, and he does, well, that shouldn't be that surprising then.
Right.
Right? And I do think Julius Thomas should have a pretty fair level of success. Now, one person suggested he'll have 14 touchdowns and over 1,000 yards. I think that would be exceeding expectations. That person also, I believe, was Clarence, who projected Blake Bortles to have 35 touchdowns and 7 picks.
That'd be nice.
It would be nice. I would say
I bet they're winning a lot of football games if that's the case.
I would say so, and I think Blake would be the correct answer to this if he throws 35 and 7. What is realistic? We talked about this a little bit last week. What is realistic for Blake in that department?
I think set the franchise record, right? It's somewhere in the mid-20s.
You think that's realistic, though, this year?
I do. I do. I do think that's realistic this year. I think that, look, I get that the numbers weren't great for him last year, but I do think that going into a second year, you should see a big step forward from him and the other guys that are around him on this offense. The offensive line has got to be better than what it was last year. So, yeah.
All right, give me final numbers. Touchdown to interception.
I'll go 24-15.
I go 20 and 15, yeah. So I'm a little lower than you. I'd say 20. 15 is still a pretty high total.
It is.
But when you consider that Blake started, what did he start last year?
13.
13 games, right. Played 13 and a half games, right? Came
yes.
at halftime of week 3.
Yes.
So 13 and a half games, he had 17 picks, which probably extrapolates out to close to 20. So it would be a slight downtick in the interceptions and a pretty significant uptick in the touchdowns, 12 to 20.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think he's set to double it. So I guess yours would exceed my expectations, but that's the thing. What are your, I guess, what are, if those are your expectations, you can't expect him to exceed your expectation. You expect him to do what you expect him to do.
Correct.
So we're trying to get the sense of what you think the typical person expects a player to do, and therefore, what do you think they'll do in relation to that? For instance, Allen Robinson, we talked about this a little bit, Tony, yesterday. I'd say somewhere 70, 75 catches, 950 to 1,000 yards, and 6, 7, 8 touchdowns, something in that ballpark. I'll call it 70 for 1,000 with 6 touchdowns, something in that neighborhood. Does that seem realistic to you, or would that exceed what you expect, or would that exceed what you think the typical person would expect
of for Allen Robinson? I think that is the expectation.
I mean, it's right in line with it, right? I may be off a little high on one number, a little low on another one, but it's in the ballpark, right? Allen Robinson last year. This is some numbers put together. Where is this coming from? Tyler, this is coming from Matt Harmon of NFL.com, right? Matt Harmon put together a chart of a number of NFL rookie wide receivers, including Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson. Does not have Allen Hurns on this chart, so I can't tell you what he did in regards to this. But they took the times they lined up and they faced man coverage, the times they lined up and they faced zone coverage, the times in which they were double-teamed, and the times where they lined up against press coverage. I don't know quite what the difference is between man and press. I guess press man, you're just on the line of scrimmage when you're defending them,
yeah.
Right? And I guess man, you could be in man-on-man, one-on-one situation, but you could be a little bit off the line of scrimmage and you're not trying to get that chuck at the line.
Right.
Is that how you would see that?
I would assume that's what it is, yeah.
All right. Looking at each category, they tell you, they give you the percentage of your success. Now, I don't know how they judge it, and you have to accept that the data is valid, or else it's no point even looking at it. Right?
Mike, I found out what success and how he defines it.
How does he define success?
Word for word from the backyardbanter.com, that's the website Matt Harmon writes for, it says, how often a receiver got open against the defenders covering him, a success is charted when a receiver gets open against the coverage, creating separation enough for the quarterback to have a reasonable target for the quarterback is marked as a success.
Okay, so basically whether the ball comes his way or not, did the guy get open
yep.
when he's running
yes,
routes?
Correct.
Right? Okay, how does it factor in? I mean, I assume this means on passing attempts that he was out there, right? Because a running play, he'd just be blocking, right?
Correct.
So, I wonder, I mean, are there instances where you're not the primary guy and the play happens so quickly that you don't even have time to get open? Is that a success or a failure? I don't know. But that's basically what they're judging on. Were you able to elude coverage and present your quarterback with an open target? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you some examples. Odell Beckham Jr., his success rate, 166 attempts run, plays run versus man coverage, he was successful 80% of the time.
Ooh.
That's the high among any rookie wide receiver from last year. The NFL average is around 62-63%, okay? So he was successful 80% of the time. For instance, Marquise Lee, 136 attempts versus man. He actually ran more routes versus man coverage than Allen Robinson did. Keeping in mind, Allen Robinson missed the final 6 games of the year.
Yep.
Marquise Lee was only successful 44% of the time. That's very low. In fact, that's the worst of any wide receiver on this chart. The other end, Allen Robinson was successful 71.7, which after Beckham and John Brown, the third-round rookie of the Arizona Cardinals, is the best of any rookie wide receiver last year. Negative numbers, Sammy Watkins, Devontae Adams, Brandon Cooks, Jordan Matthews, all those guys had below NFL average numbers. Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin, Jarvis Landry, all right about at the average, and then the other rookies they charted, some of them had far fewer attempts, but you know, Allen Robinson had 113, that's a pretty good sample size, was among the most successful in getting open versus man coverage. All right, so we move on to zone coverage. Once again, Odell Beckham Jr., 83.8. Don't zone me.
He's just good.
Don't zone me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting open.
So he's getting open like 82% of the time.
I know I'm burning this guy you're putting out here on an island. It's going to get worse if you zone me. All right, so he is the best in that regard. Then there's a group in the mid to high 70s that, again, includes Allen Robinson, 74.2% of the time. So all these guys seem to be a little bit more successful versus zone than man. Marquise Lee went from 44% successful to 60%. Big improvement.
Yeah.
But the NFL average moves up to around 72% here as well. So he's still below the NFL average in getting open versus the zone. Double teams. How many times do these guys run routes versus double teams? Marquise Lee was doubled 4 times last year on actual passing plays. Was not successful on any of the 4. It's a very small sample size. Allen Robinson ran 15 routes versus double coverage, 33% successful. That doesn't sound bad to me, but it's still below. The NFL average is around 42%. So basically, he was successful 5 out of 15 times. Here's the big thing, Tony, that I think happens is that they're going to be picking their poison. Are we going to, because they want to, the Jags want to establish a run.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have success, if this offensive line has some kind of success, teams are going to come in wanting to take the run away from the Jaguars. Then you've got Thomas and Robinson as what we see as the primary targets in the passing game. You're not going to be doubling both of these guys.
Right.
Right? Right now, Julius Thomas is a lot more established. Allen Robinson should be seeing single coverage frequently, particularly in the early part of the season, until and unless he establishes himself as a week-in, week-out threat, which is good. And then finally, attempts versus press coverage, where they're coming up and getting in your grill on the line of scrimmage. Odell Beckham said, oh, you thought the other numbers were good. by the way, versus double teams, he was doubled 28 times, which was by far the most out of any of these guys. 67.9% success rate.
So,
which is better than most guys had versus just straight man coverage.
So last year, Odell Beckham was, you couldn't cover
him. It was uncoverable, basically, by NFL standards. Press coverage. He faced press coverage, Odell Beckham did, 90 times, mm-hmm. where the guy's right up. He's trying to disrupt your route. The moment the ball is snapped, he had his best success rate, 86.7%. You can't get a finger on me. Marquise Lee, 68 routes versus press coverage. He was 55% successful. So he was actually better when you tried to press him. Maybe he used his initial quickness to get around the jam than if you just played off him a little bit in man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Allen Robinson, same scenario, 57 attempts versus press coverage, successful 77.2% of the time, among the best, trailing only, as we mentioned, Beckham Jr., Jordan Matthews, who only had 14 attempts there, and Allen Robinson right there with Kelvin Benjamin in that regard. So Allen Robinson, with the exception of when he was double teamed, and very few guys had a positive success rate versus double teams, was well above the league average in terms of running routes getting open last year against every kind of coverage. So
that's good stuff.
It's very good stuff. I think that just, you know, when you say 70 for 1,000 yards, maybe we are underselling what he's going to do this year. So put it this way. If you're going to submit Allen Robinson as your guess for who most surprisingly exceeds expectations, tell us what you think his numbers will be. Catches, yards, touchdowns. I'm curious to think what people think the perception of what's expected of Allen Robinson is this year. He's not the guy, by the way, I would answer first and foremost to this question. We'll talk about our nominees for this a little bit later on. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. We got to take a quick time out. Oh, yeah, this state in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Just chock full of historically significant things that happened on this day, Tony. I can't remember any of them, though. 1968. Former Jaguar great Reggie Cobb was born on this day. Hey, look, he got in one game in 95 with the team.
He did.
Known mostly as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer after playing at the University of Tennessee. 47 years young today. That's the kind of day it was in football history. Michael McCrary, longtime NFL defensive end, turned 45 today, born in 1970. And the Kung Fu Panda himself, Michael Westbrook. You thought I was talking about somebody else. Talking about the guy who actually became a... Didn't he become a mixed martial artist?
He did.
Every time his name comes up,
he did.
We do this. Did he beat up Stephen Davis, right?
He beat up Stephen Davis.
That's what he's known for, basically.
And then after he was out of the NFL, he became an MMA fighter.
He was a fifth-round pick of mine in a keeper league around 2000. Didn't work out for me.
Probably not.
Nah. He had like one decent, you know, kind of fantasy-relevant year, as I recall, but that was about it. He was turning 43 years young today. That's it. That's all I got. I'm a state in football history, but what I do have is a good recommendation. If you need a family dentist or you need some cosmetic work done, go see Dr. James McCall over on Gate Parkway. His office is 620-9225, the phone number, a certified Invisalign provider, and, of course, the custom fit stop snoring mouth guard from SomnaMed as well. Visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this state in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
The New York Giants have pulled their long-term offer that they had on the table for defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul after he injured his hand in a fireworks accident this weekend down in South Florida. Adam Schefter said yesterday that the Giants are concerned that JPP could miss all of training camp and possibly the beginning of the regular season, but the truth is at this point no one really knows how severe the injuries are, with reports early on saying that it could be career-threatening that have turned out to be blatantly false, at least based on the information that we have. Right now, the New York Giants apparently sending a contingent down to South Florida today to get an update on what's going on with Jason Pierre-Paul.
Although I heard the guys on primetime yesterday kind of bemoaning the fact that the initial reports indicated it was a serious injury. Well, it is a serious injury.
It's serious.
The guy burned his hand pretty significantly and may not be ready to play in 10 weeks. It's a serious injury.
Yeah, it was just the conjecture was out there that this may be the end of Jason Pierre-Paul as a football player.
He might lose fingers.
Right. That was some of the early talk, at least, and that doesn't appear to be true based on the latest reports we have. I mentioned yesterday the Cowboys and wide receiver Dez Bryant reportedly close to a new long-term deal. Dez and JPP, who we were just talking about, are both players that were franchised by the Cowboys and Giants, respectively. Demaryius Thomas, who was franchised by the Denver Broncos, wants Calvin Johnson money on his new deal. Teams and franchise players have until July 15th, that would be next Wednesday, to get new deals done, or the players will have to play 2015 under the one-year franchise number. Poor guys.
Speaking of losing the old fingers, another one of those movies that, you know, when they come on, you have to watch, or at least watch a portion of. Casino was on last night.
Yeah.
That takes up a four-hour block of your television viewing, right, with the commercials laden in there.
Yeah, I know.
But where they go to town on the dude's hand, you're righty or lefty. I don't care if you've never seen a mob movie. When they've got your fingers spread out on the table, and they're asking you if you're a righty or a lefty.
You lie.
You probably lie, unless you really, are they really doing this to give me a choice? No, yeah, I'm a lefty. Yeah, I'm a lefty. I'll go with the lefty. And I'm a righty. Why? As his fingers are spread on the table the guy that has the saw and the hammer, okay? Neither one of which is a good option.
Lessons from movies. If you ever find yourself in that situation.
Right. Maybe I'd ball my fingers up first. I don't know what I would do.
I wouldn't be in that situation. That's
all right, but come on.
That's the honest truth.
Yeah, who among us hasn't strapped some kind of electronic Morse code device to our leg to try to cheat at blackjack?
Yes.
Huh?
To err is human.
I mean, it was a simple mistake. I didn't remember it was there. I didn't remember it was there when I packed it. It was like that loaded gun in my suitcase. I hid it there so my child wouldn't get to
That's right.
No child would ever go in a packed suitcase. Come on. All right. Tony, I have a list. You got to love it. From nerdwallet.com, which is my favorite news site to go to, which talks about which franchises are the most efficient. Who gets the most bang for their buck? Okay, first of all, I'll tell you this. Baseball and football, we talk about what it costs to win a game, the actual cost of winning a game, pretty close. Okay, the average price of a Major League Baseball win, based on, you know, payroll and all that, is a little over $1 million, $1,016,674. Call it $1 million bucks, close enough for these purposes. Well, in the NFL, the cost of a win is $11.8 million. But when you figure that Major League Baseball plays 10 times as many games, right? 10 wins in baseball, the equivalent of one win in football, and it comes out roughly in the same ballpark. It's a little more expensive for football than it is for baseball, but reasonably.
Is that comparable with NBA as well?
The NBA is 1.5 million, so I think they're the best bargain because they play 82 games, right? And so let's say every win of theirs is like two wins in baseball, right? Because they're playing half the games. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. Every one of theirs then is like two in baseball. So that means compared to baseball, it would cost about $750,000 for a victory in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
It's still somewhat within reason. You know, it seems like between $750,000 to $1.2 million, something in that is what it's going to cost you when you average out the seasons between those sports. It's a lot of money.
No, it's a ton of money.
But then it makes you think, all right, that's just for the wins. Well, we got to pay even when we lose games, and how much are they raking it? I mean, how much are these TV contracts and the concessions? I mean, it's a money-making enterprise.
Sure.
We understand that. Even the NBA now, which has gone through some rough periods of financial stability, now you see the salary cap getting set to explode, which is typically an indicator of, obviously, new TV money coming in, but just the general pool of money growing exponentially right now.
And this is a bit of a different – and it's not like saying that it's you know – $750,000 every time you play, because the teams that are winning, if they're paying more to their players to put themselves in a
correct
position to win, that number is going to go up. So it's what teams are being able to maintain that winning and do it at an efficient level from a cost perspective.
It's an interesting group because I think there are some that you would think on here like, oh, you know what?
I mean, my first two guesses would be Seattle and New England.
Well, New England's the best. It only ranks the three sports, football, baseball, basketball. New England is number one, okay, in payroll efficiency. And I can't, you know, they have a number, a score, and I don't really know what it equates to. The score is 2.05, basically, which, you know, when you go down to, say, the 30th best team in these sports, mm-hmm, it's 1.07. So they're like, they're well ahead of the average. The next team is 1.85, then 1.69, then 1.5. So it falls off pretty steeply from the Patriots. Seattle is not in the top 10, but I tell you what we'll do. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back and tell you where the Jaguars are. How efficient are they? They haven't won much, but they haven't.
Right.
They've had a lower payroll than a lot of teams in the National Football League have had in recent years as well. So we'll compare their cost per victory and their efficiency compared to the other teams out there. And some of them, yeah, that makes perfect sense. All right, the Patriots, they win a ton, and there's a salary cap, so they only can spend so much. So you figure they'd be pretty efficient, but some of the ones out here, you're like, wow, really? They're most efficient? They must not be paying anybody anything because they don't win a whole lot. And there's some of that going on, too. So we'll get to that coming up as well. Take your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010 if you'd like to weigh in on which Jaguar player will most surprisingly exceed expectations this year. That's the question of the day. I think we got Gary on the line, so let's get him before the break here quickly. And we got some texters on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. Gary, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Did somebody seriously say 35-7 for Blake?
Well, they said it, but how? When you say, did they seriously say it? I'm serious that they said it. I don't know how serious they were when they said it.
I'd say 22-16 is more about like it.
I say 20-15. I think that's somewhere in that ballpark, mid-teens on the picks, you know. And look, I'd love for it to be 12, right?
Right, and I'd say 65-70 for Allen Robinson.
65 catches.
For 900,
I mean, he was on pace for 77 last year. So I think anything under 70, again, if he stays healthy. So 65-70 for 900 yards, it seems pretty reasonable, Gary. I appreciate it. Yeah, I don't – look, go ahead. Sorry. Finish your thought. All right, he's done. That's his thought. Beep, I'm out of here. All right, I thought I cut him off there with something to say. But that's the thing. If you say Allen Robinson, just tell us what you think. You know, what numbers you expect, and then I'll let you know if I think that's reasonably exceeding expectations. Here's one on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I expect Allen Robinson to have 1,300 yards and at least 13 touchdowns. Go Jags. That would be exceeding expectations. That would be one of the handful of best receiving years in the history of this franchise, including all the years Jimmy Smith put up.
Yep.
I mean, that would be phenomenal. Jimmy Smith never had any 13 touchdown season here. In fact, Reggie Williams, the only wide receiver to go double digits, along with Mercedes Lewis as a tight end, right? I mean, 10 is the record, Tony, isn't it?
I believe so.
10's the record, for goodness sakes.
Guys, if Allen Robinson does reach 1,300 yards, he would become the second wide receiver to do it. Jimmy Smith did that three times.
Did it three times, okay. And what Jimmy's high touchdown total, I want to say, is 8 in a season.
I'm looking at it now. It's 8.
8. So, I mean, 1,313, even in today's day and age, could get you a sniff of the Pro Bowl. And it's a pretty competitive field out there. You think about Mike Evans last year, Tony, coming in as a rookie with Tampa, with garbage quarterback play. Guy went over 1,000 yards with 12 touchdowns last year. You know, so you look at it and you're like, wow, he wasn't the best rookie wide receiver either. Just goes to show you the long-storied history of Jaguar wide receiver success is not all that long and storied. It starts and ends, for the most part, with Jimmy and Keenan, and even they didn't reach a lot of the milestones that are being put up on a regular basis today.
Well, and to give you an idea, if, say, Allen Robinson this year caught 75 passes, right, which I think is around a reasonable expectation for Allen Robinson going into his second year, 75 catches would put him 12th on the all-time single-season receiving list. I mean, that's the kind of numbers
for the Jags.
Yeah. And they've had Jimmy Smith caught 100 passes in a season twice. They've had that happen twice.
What do you have, 116 one year?
116 in 1999 for 1,600 yards and 6 touchdowns. He caught 112 in 2001 for around 1,400 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Isn't that crazy? Tony, they're 14-2. My man has 1,600 yards or 116 catches. He only catches 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's just weird how that would happen with the Jags. All right, so weigh in with your thoughts on that. And Allen Robinson was on pace for 77 catches, as I said last year. I would be very surprised if he stays healthy, if he's not at least at the 70 mark going forward in 2015. 641-1010 is the number. We'll come back. We'll look at the most efficient franchises in sports in terms of cost per victory. We'll do that next. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We're doing a little unofficial Jaguars Today research, which we always love to do. We're the most researched show on the network. I don't know. No idea. Not that many guys have caught 116 passes in the season, Tony.
No, it doesn't happen all that often.
13 guys have done it more than 116. Jimmy Smith is 14th all-time with 116 catches. And so we're just looking. I noted going to the break, I thought it was weird that Jimmy Smith only scored 6 times in 99 on 116 catches. Duval Doom tweets me, 99 wasn't weird, it was Fred Taylor. Well, was it Fred Taylor? Fred Taylor in 99 only started 9 games, ran for 732 yards, and he only scored 6 times himself. Wasn't Fred. Jimmy Smith, the Jags passing offense never produced huge touchdown totals.
No.
Yardage? On occasion, yes. But we wanted to look quickly and see, were there any guys who caught more than 116 catches in a season and scored as few touchdowns as 6? And we did find that Wes Welker did it in 2009. He had 123 catches and only 4 scores, but he also had 122 a couple years later and scored 9 times. But Welker, Tony, particularly around that time, Randy Moss, how many years was Moss in New England? Was he still there? He came in 2007. I want to say he probably played about 2 years. Regardless, Wes Welker is not the field stretcher. Wes Welker works all the underneath stuff. He piles up high reception totals, but they don't always lead to scores, right?
No, they don't.
It's more difficult. With Jimmy Smith was a field stretching guy.
Yeah.
Welker
actually did it twice in his career. 2011 and 2012, he had 116 or more receptions and less than 6 touchdowns.
Right, 2012, he had exactly 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So equaled it. In 2009, he had the 4.
The other name will surprise you. In 2012, Calvin Johnson had just 5 touchdowns.
He did. You know, I was just looking at it. That does surprise me, though. But
you say that. 122 catches, just 5 touchdowns.
And what do we say? That's weird, right? No, it is weird. So it's not very frequent that you have that prolific a receiver who is a deep threat, like Jimmy Smith was, who only gets to the end zone 6 times. So we, in part, brought this up. Somebody had a
He had almost 2,000 yards receiving that year and 5 touchdowns. He had 1,964 yards receiving that year with 5 touchdowns.
Is that the year he had the one in the end zone taken away when he stood up?
Probably.
Say, would that say?
Probably. Yeah, he averaged 122.8 yards receiving a game.
All right, then.
In 2012, those numbers are ridiculous.
You're saying that's good? Is that good?
That's pretty good. Right. And his long on the year was only 53 yards, and he put up those numbers.
Hmm.
That's crazy. That's a weird year. 2012 for Calvin Johnson. That is a weird year.
Right. I bet he didn't score the most fantasy points of any wide receiver that year, right? Well, maybe. I don't know. 2,000 yards a lot.
That's a ton.
That's a ton. But you got to make up. You know, there's somebody scoring 15 touchdowns out there. There's a fly in here right now, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not happy about that. It's buzzing around my head. That's what it's doing. Must smell like garbage. All right. Most efficient franchises. Give me your guesses. Give me some guesses for the top 10. You said the Patriots and the Seahawks. So you got one strike against you. Patriots number one. Seahawks came in at number 18.
For most efficient
Most
teams?
Efficient in terms of payroll efficiency. Bang for your buck.
Numbers. I think Brandon Marshall probably outscored him in 2012. He had 118 catches and 11 touchdowns that year. So I'm guessing he was right around.
Seven more TDs. That's good for 42 more points.
Only four less on the PPR. I'm not
42
sure.
42 would be equal 420 receiving yards. How many yards did he have that year, Brandon Marshall?
He had 1,500.
That's close.
That's close.
That's real close. That's real close.
Other efficient
nerd alert,
teams.
By the way, I'm on nerdwallet.com right now to the surprise of no one.
Other efficient teams.
Bang for your buck teams in all the three major North American sports. So apologies to hockey.
It's basically low payroll teams, essentially.
Not necessarily. You want me to just give them to you?
Yeah, because this is a weird.
Spare us all this drama. I know it's gripping. After this fly is going to. Its life expectancy is dwindling. Let me tell you right now. Oh, just about landed on my left cheek, my face, not my butt. The Patriots are the most efficient team. The Spurs are the next most efficient team in terms of dollars spent per victory.
Makes sense.
Based on their league average. See, that one, he almost landed up my nose that time. Truly, Tony. Third most efficient team, the Miami Marlins.
Really?
They don't spend any money.
At least then.
I guess, right?
What is the time period for this, does it say?
Let's see.
Because they're spending some cash
I think
this
is over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, over the last 15 years.
Because they are spending some serious money in Miami right now.
Yeah, there's a 15-year window. So that even makes more sense because the Patriots and Spurs have been such consistent winners over that time period. Tampa Bay Rays are fourth.
That makes a lot of sense.
Moneyball, Oakland A's are fifth.
Uh-huh.
Right? So basically, if you go on the cheap in baseball and you have any modicum of success,
right,
you're going to be here. The Colts, another consistent winner, 10-win team. They had the one bad year, but I'm telling you, Tony, this fly, I'm telling you, I wish we had a webcam right now because there's going to be carnage up in the studio. The Colts are sixth. I'm done with this now. The Steelers are seventh. The Pirates are eighth. The Ravens are 9, and the Packers are 10, and nobody cares at this point. The fate of this fly hangs in the balance. The Jaguars came in, where do you think? Out of 92 ranked teams, you can't have number 92 because my Knicks have that spot.
Right. I'll put them right around the middle. Let's say 40.
77.
Oh.
What does it mean? I don't know what it means. It means they haven't won enough. Ultimately, right?
I mean, look, the Colts haven't exactly been doing it on the cheap with spending the money they've had to on Peyton Manning, right? I mean, the last couple of years are probably cheaper because you have Andrew Luck under a manageable contract in this post, you know, slotting deal in the NFL draft. But that's, you know, that's 11, 12 years of Peyton Manning getting paid.
But getting 10 wins every
right.
year.
I mean,
many times 11, 12, 13 wins.
So it's a lot more, in their case, about being a consistent winner because your number for how much you're paying for those wins goes down.
Well, that's what it happens in football. In football, it's all about being a consistent winner because you're capped. You can't have that wide a gap between the top
right.
and the bottom consistently like you can in baseball. The Yankees are one of the least efficient.
Right.
Teams.
If you're spending $120 million on the cap every year in the NFL, essentially, if you get 10 wins, that means the win costs you 12.
Correct.
Right? And if you got four wins, that means the wins cost you 30. I mean, it's just, there's a huge difference there.
The Yankees are 90th out of 92 teams. Again, you have the payroll disparity. They may have won just as much as any of these teams over the last 15 years, but they've spent well more than these teams. By the way, few teams down really near the bottom. I mean, the Jags are 77.
Mm-hmm.
In the NFL, the Lions are 91st.
Golly.
How can you be that low in a salary-controlled environment?
Well, they're not winning. They spent all that money on Stafford. They spent all that money on Calvin Johnson. Right? I mean, they've spent a lot of money. And
they've been better of late.
They won some games last year, but they're still a team that hovers around 6-10. Spending all that money, they don't win enough.
Cleveland Browns are 89th. The Raiders are 88th. The Bills are 86th. So these are the teams the Jags are more efficient than. The Cardinals are 85th. The Redskins are 84th. The Texans are 83rd. The Rams are 80th. And those are the teams that the Jags are more efficient than amongst their NBA brethren or their NFL brethren. They're nestled in between the Brooklyn Nets and the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Who is the last ranked team just in the three sports?
The Knicks.
The Knicks?
Oh, I wasn't kidding you. Oh, the Knicks are dead last. The Knicks will spend wildly for their 17 victories. Okay? Wildly. 641-1010. Let's go to the phones. And welcome Jerome to the program. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How y'all doing this morning?
Good. What's up, man?
I just want to say I think Delvin, man, is going to be the breakout player of the year. But I'm curious about Devon House, though. He definitely has my attention because I don't really know much about him, but to bring him in and be the number one corner, I mean, I hope he pans out, but he definitely has my curiosity. And I'm just really on caution about Sergio Brown. I'm not sold on him. I'm not quite sure what to think about how he's going to work out. You know what I mean? I don't know if Sample's going to give him a run and Sample's going to take it out. I don't really know. But I'm curious about him, but I'm more cautious about Devon House. I just want to know your opinion and all these.
All right, sure. I'll start with Telvin. First of all, I think people have pretty high expectations for Telvin Smith. I don't know if you know, with linebackers, you don't instantly translate those to stats necessarily. You don't say, well, Telvin Smith's going to have X sacks, X interceptions, but we think he's going to make big plays, right? And so for him to exceed my expectations, he's going to have to play maybe to a Pro Bowl level.
Right.
I mean, I think he's going to be one of the more exciting players to watch all season long on this football team. So my expectations are already pretty high. Look, if Devon House came in here, Tony, had a half dozen picks this year and held down one of the starting corner spots, I think that'd be a pretty damn good season for him, right?
Well, and we've been talking about these numbers for the last hour and a half and comparing them to last year. It's like we talk about Blake Bortles. What are your expectations for Blake Bortles compared? You look at what he did last year. So what's a reasonable expectation, right? Look at the interception numbers for this team last year. If anyone had four interceptions this year, that's a tremendous season because that's what they had as a team. I mean, that's essentially what they were last
and
year.
And that thing of it is, it's still not necessarily a tremendous season, but compared to where they were,
right.
it just goes to show you really how bad they were in that department.
Like, if someone got
year.
Half a dozen interceptions on
you
this team.
Right, we'd be going gaga over that kind of thing. I don't know. Look, I think it's fair to question what you're going to get out of Devon House and
sure.
Sergio Brown. And, look, Dave Caldwell said, you know, had they gotten McCourty from New England and they had a significant offer into him, that money may not have been allocated for some of these other guys. So
sure.
It wasn't like they went out and said, we got to get Sergio Brown to plug this hole. They said, all right, we're going to try to get Devin McCourty. Failing that, what are our options? Well, let's get a guy in here who we think profiles to, A, help us regardless because he is, the term they use, a plus special teamer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a scout in baseball. He's got a plus fastball. It's better than average. This guy is a difference-making special teams contributor. And we think he can also potentially help us. Not going to be handed anything, but we think he can help us. And then they go out and draft James Sample. Nobody would have been shocked, or put it this way, nobody should have been shocked if they spent an even higher pick on a safety.
If there was one available.
If the right guy had been there,
yeah.
If there was a guy that they felt could have helped them, Tony, at the top of round two, I was talking about that during the draft. As we talked that morning of day two, I thought that was a possibility, kind of the zigzag route they could have gone that nobody was talking about.
Look, free safety we knew was going to be a priority coming into this offseason. There was really one option. I mean, when it came to free safety and free agency in the draft this year, there was really one option. They went hard after Devin McCourty. McCourty decided to stay in New England. And you can't fault him for deciding to stay in New England where he already knows what his role is going to be and knows where that team is. I don't blame Devin McCourty. I also don't blame the Jaguars for not landing Devin McCourty, because I think they did everything that they could to get that guy. And Sample, look, he's a guy who played strong safety in college, and they feel like he's a good coverage safety, so they're giving him a chance to be the free safety. I said landed on your face that time.
That was on my nose, man.
But they're giving him a chance to play free safety in the NFL. Is that going to work out? I don't know. Is Sergio Brown going to work out as a free safety for this team? I don't know, but they're doing what they can to try to improve the position, I give them credit for. By the way,
yes,
talking about the interception numbers, one player, they had four interceptions last year, one player on this team. I don't think you got it. We got to the other microphone. One player on the team had two interceptions last year. Do you know who it was?
On the Jags?
Yeah.
Telvin Smith.
JT Thomas.
Ah, okay.
Was the only one with multiple interceptions on the season. Right. I mean, that's where they're at.
You're cover linebacker.
Right. That's where they're at.
Right. And he's not at here anymore. By the way, somebody asked on the Buster's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, what about the Cardinal baseball team? They came in 21st and apparently had to steal proprietary information to get there. So
that's right.
Does it really even count? I mean, come on. Let's move along, and we'll get back to the phone lines in a minute. The question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this: which Jaguar player will most surprisingly exceed those expectations that the public has on them this year? We'll get to that coming up next. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, the little side routes we get into. Got an update on Hacker's Breakfast.
You wouldn't notice because you hate tomatoes.
I don't hate tomatoes. Like, where do you get the idea that I hate tomatoes?
Like, we've had this conversation before. I've told you, tomato is my favorite food.
Well, so what?
So I would notice it if there was a restaurant that was offering me tomatoes as like a side dish. I would notice.
Have you ever eaten tomatoes for breakfast? I said, you mean like in an omelet?
It's not my entire meal, no.
I didn't say it's your entire meal, but you're saying you order a side of tomatoes?
Yeah, they'll bring you a sliced tomato.
They'll bring you anything you order in a restaurant.
No, there's an option as a side.
I don't think there is.
I'm telling you there is.
I said, let me go Google the Village Inn menu.
I don't remember where.
You said, I know Famous Amos had it. I'm on the Famous Amos menu page, okay? And there are plenty of things that include tomato on them, like a burger and such. There's no option on their sides.
I can't believe you really have never seen this as an option.
Sliced tomato?
Yes.
So you're going for breakfast. What do you want, honey, with that? You want the toast? You want the English muffin, or you want the sliced tomato?
And I'm telling you right now, I'd rather have the sliced tomato.
I'm saying no one has ever asked that question in that sequence in the history of language.
I'm telling you they have.
Hi, honey. Do you want the toast?
On this one.
Do you want the English muffin?
On this one.
Or do you want the sliced tomato?
You're just wrong on this one, Mike. It's not on
the Famous Amos menu, Tony. I'm looking at all their sides. They don't offer sliced tomato as a side. Could you ask them for a sliced tomato? Yes, you could.
I'm not telling you I know exactly where. All right, I'm telling you that I've been to restaurants where as an option as a side with your meal, you can have sliced tomato. I'm telling you I've had it because I don't go in and ask for sliced. It's not like the thing that's on the top of my mind.
Is this a hipster thing?
No.
Is this some hipster thing where you go in and watch some friendly from some other time zone
first of all,
at 6 in the morning and ask for a sliced tomato?
I may be a soccer hipster in a lot of ways, but I do not go to a bunch of hipster restaurants. Like, that's not who I am.
I don't know what you do.
I'm the guy who had Burger King for dinner last night.
Burger King is delicious.
Right. And it's far from hipster.
It's wholesome.
Like, I don't go to a hipster restaurant.
Let me read down for you. Breakfast a la carte, Tony. I can get an egg at a Famous Amos. I can get crispy bacon or sausage links.
Cracker Barrel. Someone just texted it in. Cracker Barrel.
Let me see. I'm going to have to look at their menu. But I'm going to. They go from toast and jelly to English muffin and jelly to biscuits to grits to cheese grits to oatmeal. No mention of the sliced tomato.
I'm just telling you I've had it.
All right.
And it's not something I go in and ask for. It's on the menu.
All right. I'm going to go Cracker Barrel menu. And I'm going to find out quickly whether or not you can get a sliced tomato. Let's see, Cracker Barrel menu. There we go. That's what I want. Give it to me, baby. Give it to No, I don't want group tours of Cracker Barrel. Who wants to take a tour of Cracker Barrel? Ridiculous. Lunch and dinner menu. That's not what I want, right? I mean, breakfast menu, Cracker Barrel. Here we go. Breakfast menu. And again, Cracker Barrel is one of these places that serves everything at all times. Do we agree with that, right? So
yeah.
In theory, if you had a side of tomatoes, it doesn't necessarily come from the breakfast menu. But I'm looking at the breakfast menu here. Wholesome Fixins, is that where I would look?
I have no idea.
Well, here are your choices. Traditional favorites, Wholesome Fixins. I need, here we go, side plates, Cracker Barrel. Fried apples, hash brown casserole, yogurt and granola, sausage patties, bacon, ham, pork chop.
Even more ham.
Country ham and biscuit, sausage and biscuit, wild Maine blueberry muffin, apple bran muffin, red eye gravy, sawmill gravy, fresh seasonal fruit. Don't even tell me that the tomato's a fruit, because that's not what they're talking about here. Fresh apple slices, turkey bacon, turkey sausage, two scrambled egg beaters, grits and cheese grits, fresh fruit and yogurt parfait. No mention of the sliced tomato.
I'm telling you, I've had it with breakfast.
You know what? If I had time, I'd look at the kids' menu, because I'm sure that's where they're hiding the sliced tomato.
I don't think that's where they're hiding the sliced tomato. I'm just telling you, I've had it.
Who is going to exceed expectations for the Jaguars this year?
I've had it, so you can argue with me about this all you want. I've had it with my breakfast.
I don't doubt you had a tomato with your breakfast. Show me the menu that offers sliced tomato as a side for breakfast.
Would I just come up with that off the top of my head?
Knowing as much as you love tomatoes, you're a propagandist.
Did I just sit down with my omelet and say, tomato, that's what I want with this, is tomato? No.
You said it's your favorite food. I would assume that, like, you would sit down and say, yes, I'd like a tomato with that.
It's not like the top of the mind food when I go out to eat.
It's your favorite food.
It's something
food.
That if I see it on a menu, I'm like, when I get my options and I see it on the menu, I'm like, oh my God, a tomato.
Never
I would love to have that.
A tomato until I saw sliced tomato on the breakfast sides menu.
Correct.
Oh, stop it.
It's the only reason I would ever order it.
You have ventured into the realm of ridiculous this morning.
I'm not saying that it's not ridiculous. I'm saying that's how it happened.
Oh, my gosh. Side note, says
but
Sean.
Eating cherry tomatoes with sriracha is ridiculous.
The fact that Famous Amos has an online menu is utterly shocking. Doesn't everybody have an online menu?
I don't know.
These days? Thought they did. We'll see if we can get to the phones here in a second, but let's get to some of the feedback. Give me your name.
Cardiac.
Who's the guy? Who's the guy for you?
I'm confused by some of the responses on the text line. We'll get to those in a minute.
All right. Who's the guy for you that's going to exceed expectations, surprisingly, this year?
You know, I'd probably put Luke Jokel. And I know it's hard to put a number on an offensive lineman and what the expectations would be, but I think they've been low enough because of the performance that we've gotten from for the first 2 years, especially last year, the broken leg and the opportunity to have an offseason. We had the opportunity to sit down and talk with him, and he does look bigger. He does look stronger. And I think the addition of Marone, I think he's going to be a middle-of-the-pack left tackle in the National Football League this year, which compared to where he's been is much higher.
I think his impact across the board is Doug Marone is going to be pretty significant. At least we hope it is. I was going to say the guy winds up next to him, Zane Beatles, Tony, because who has any expectations for Zane Beatles, right? There are probably people that think that AJ Cann is going to beat him out in training camp. Might be a significant number of people that feel that way.
Sure.
And I think, you know, everything you hear, he's really taken to Marone and really, you know, feeling a lot more comfortable coming in kind of more as a leader of that unit. This year, you look back and they'll tell you that he played better down the stretch than the early part of the season indicated. I think his poor play certainly put him early in the season, put him in these crosshairs for low expectations. And I think my gut tells me, and this is no inside information, my gut tells me he's going to hold off AJ Cann. He's going to be the starter all year. And it's not going to be nearly as devastating as we thought it was, obviously. And I think part of that is being pushed by a third round pick. Knowing that they've got other options out there. All right, so give us some of the feedback that came in via the tweets, please.
Here's what we got from Irish Jaguar Zane Beatles, from Blake Bortles Facts, not Blake Bortles because he's already great. Hashtag Touchdown Bortles, from Nick, TJ Yeldon, from Josh A-Rob, if he can stay healthy, from Jimbo, Rashad Green, too good of a route runner not to be successful in the slot, from Cristiano, I hope it's Blake, from Eric, I think Andre Branch can have a 12 to 14 sack year. Most are saying 8 to 10 for him, I think. From Demetrius, Luke Jokel, although he's not getting a lot of offseason buzz, the Marone hire will accelerate his development. From Nate, I think Denard Robinson will make another huge leap. From Nick, the offensive line, I could see our sack total drop from 72 to 25. That would be a huge, huge drop. I'm not sure it's going to get to that kind of level. From Daniel, I've got two. Offensively will be Rashad Green. Defensively, Jonathan Cyprian. From Isaiah, Ryan Davis. From Buddy, Denard Robinson. That man will finally come alive in the backfield, maybe even play a little quarterback. Hashtag run, Denard, run. Hashtag Wildcat. Don't think that's going to happen. From Christoph, Allen Hurns going over 1,000 yards, and can we can finally say we have a 1,000-yard receiver again.
All right, will you ring in Terrence, please? Thank you very much. Hello, Terrence. How are you?
Ding, ding.
Hey, Mike. Hey. Well, back on to Luke Jokel right out of my house. That's what I was going to say.
But, Luke Jokel's your guy. All right.
Yeah, but I was wondering, does it have to be a player?
All right. Tell us who, because we're short on time. So tell us your thought.
Okay. I'm going to put it on the coach. I'm going to say coach is going to be, he's going to surprise, go past his expectation this year. But,
what does that mean? What does that mean? A win total for, they're going to, okay.
Yeah. Right. I think he'll at least double his win total. I don't know if that'll be enough, but I think he'll do that.
All right.
I don't see a 1,000-yard receiver on this roster. I think Allen Robinson will get close, but I don't think, if you realistic, I don't think he's going to play, I think he'll have about 80 receptions and, probably about 970 receiving yards.
He's going to come so close, but just not enough.
Right. So,
all right.
I don't know, that's my take.
All right,
Mike.
Yeah. Thank you, Terrence. Ring him out, please, if you would. Ding him out, I guess is the case. 970, 1,000, you know, we're splitting hairs here, right? Mm-hmm. Give me 80 with 970, Tony. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Right? Give me a half dozen touchdowns. That's a nice step forward for Allen Robinson. By the way, what's the name of that site again, Tyler? Backyard Brawl? What is it?
I think it's thebackyardbanter.com.
Backyard Banter, thebackyardbanter.com. Had a nice article you linked to me. I'll see if I can find it again.
Yes, thebackyardbanter.com. Matt Harmon is his name.
Yeah, he apparently is a contributor to NFL.com as well, at least according to his Twitter feed. But he had an article back in April about how Allen Robinson is good, a versatile route runner, and why he's a major breakout candidate. This was a couple months ago before, you know, the buzz has been picking up on Allen Robinson of late. So, you know, pretty good foresight by him. A couple of last things here. At Colby Wacker on Twitter said, a sliced tomato for a breakfast side sounds like commie propaganda to me. Well, somebody said Pollo Tropical, I think is how you say it. Pollo, right?
Pollo.
Pollo,
yeah.
Tropical. Okay. First of all, you know, I'm thinking more American fare, but that's fine. This is Caribbean food. They do offer balsamic tomatoes, vine ripened tomatoes, and red onions in a balsamic vinaigrette dressing.
Ooh.
As a side dish. I don't think that's particularly a breakfast side dish. I don't know. Do they even do breakfast at a place like that?
No, I don't think they're open for breakfast.
Right, so that's the point.
Awesome.
Well, that's fine. And I'm sure there are tomato dishes on menus. I'm just saying on a breakfast menu, sliced tomatoes as a side, I'd like to see it. That's all. I don't want to see it. I'd like it to be shown to me. You know what I'm saying? I don't care if they put it on there. I don't need to see it. I'm not ordering sliced tomatoes for breakfast.
I would, and I have. That's fine. That's all I'm telling you. I have.
You and I are going to fight right after this, and then I'm going to kill that fly. and not necessarily in that order.
I did find one of the menu items at Cracker Barrel that actually came with sliced tomatoes. Like, sliced tomatoes is part of the meal.
Is it a breakfast?
Yes, with bacon and eggs and fruit and sliced tomatoes.
Still not a side. But
good morning breakfast.
That's better. It's better evidence than you presented thus far, Tony.